part of mathematics. And now I'm going to tell you about, let's say, the theory of election. This theory is, of course, not a very, very new subject. It was developed for many, many years, and I will make a brief introduction to the subject. And general motivation is simple. Political forces sometimes have an access to data, look at data, some numbers, and try to explain, then understand or predict events. So first of all, let me show you some data. You will recognize what's that. You don't need to recognize. So basically, you see a lot of red and a bit of blue. Okay, I'm born in this part of Europe where the notion of red is very different to me. Some of here, I realize, look exactly the same. Hold on, have you ever seen such a map of US? You recognize the map? What's that? This is exactly the same country, written in a bit different way. Can you guess how it's written? It's population, right? So you see this is Long Island, there are a lot of small states, which are now the size exactly proportional to population. So if you now look at this map, now you do not see that the area of red is so much larger than blue. Of course it's larger, but not so much. You see California is huge. What's that? Illinois is huge. And this New England and all this is very huge. And this is how it looks. Well, let me go into a bit more detail, show the same data. Now, describe, let's say, county by county. And here you might think that, that dominates everywhere. And now we can do the same trick. So plot, it's called population cartogram. This map is very fancy, very nice. You see that somehow the, on average, blue and red, okay, they're almost half and half. This is Long Island, by the way. So we are somewhere here, yes. And then, of course, you see that in those blue parts, there were votes, people were voting blue, so for Democrats, in red parts, they were voting for the Republicans. And then, in my abstract, I have written a very well-known observation that average person living, let's say, in Texas or in California or in Massachusetts had a smaller impact on the results of election than, let's say, an average citizen of Ohio. Why is it so? Because you know, we really know why it's so, but here it doesn't look from this diagram, you will not see it yet. So one has to go one step further. So here is another graph. Now here we have only, yes?
I just have a small comment on the data. As physicists, we're used to putting error bars on things. And some of those numbers have rather large errors. Especially in the counties where they use voting machines.
We have only, but this is just a point. Here there are no error bars. This is only dichotomic plot. All either all, red or blue. However, next, as you can guess, of course, next point is just to go into more detail into numbers. So here's another sketch of the similar, the standard map and this population cartogram. But now, red is those where Republicans got more than 70, blue is Democrats more than 70, and purple is all in between. So now you can guess, well, here's the same data in those population like sketch. And now you could think that, well, the purple area is somehow interesting. Well, the purple area, it describes those counties where the votes were split. Here is, in a sense, a magnification of this plot, and here I have to quote the author, Robert J. Vanderbly, who titled his graph as Purple America. Purple because exactly red is 100% Republican, blue is 100% Democrats, and here's a lot of purple. And indeed, Ohio and let's say this part of Florida is, as you see, more purple. And then those countries indeed belong to politicians. Political scientists call them pivotal states.
Pivotal,
thank you. Pivotal, it means that, well, basically the result is uncertain. And then they define the pivotal coefficient. It's basically very simple. Number is the number of electors which are elected in a given state divided by the absolute value of the difference between the results obtained by Democrats and Republicans. So the larger this number, it means that a lot of electoral votes are still uncertain. And then from this perspective, indeed, in Ohio, as you know, and in the previous elections was Florida, this coefficient was largest, and it means that the result of election in 2000 in Florida and 2004 in Ohio was so important, was crucial to the total result of the elections in the entire country. So now you could ask, well, why is it so? And more precisely, how to measure, how to quantify power, let's say voting power, which can be defined as a kind of influence a given citizen has for the final outcome of the result.
Not counting the guy who owns the voting machine company.
No, okay. There are some other problems. Here I will say, okay, theoretical analysis of an approximation. So here, my approximation is, and I don't go into such technical. So, okay, I get some numbers, and I try to, as usual, this is what usually theoretical analysis also have some kind of confidence level to the data produced by experimenters. So it is in a sense, okay, they are experimental data, and we try to work with them. Here's another sketch. You have the same data. Now, plotted in a different way, then now heads are proportional to the population density, so the volumes are now proportional to the total number of votes. So from this perspective, you see that somehow the large parts of reddish is somehow balanced by small parts, but huge columns of blue, bluish here. Because cities are highly populated and they were voting blue. So now you see this is the, let's say, set up of the problem, and I would like for you to present a short introduction to the theory of voting power, and at the very end we'll discuss, let's say, applications to the problems in Europe. Here I started from the Canadian perspective, maybe American elections are important, but for me the first motivation were the was the voting system in Europe. However, in both cases, the main issue is that the decision of the... that first of all, the citizens were only choosing their representatives. In a sense, they were choosing president in an indirect way, because in each state they were choosing electors, and those electors were choosing president. In Europe, the situation is different, but now, for instance, Poland joined the European Union a year ago, yes, and in Europe, the situation looks like this. In each country, people have a privilege to elect their governments, and then the government, for instance, sends its representative, for instance, a Minister of Foreign Affairs to the so-called European Council, and this European Council takes decision with such a qualified majority voting. So in this council, European Council, so it's like a voting body, the decision is taken if a certain qualified majority is obtained. So now let us consider a single citizen. What is, let's say, American citizen, what is his influence for the outcome of the election? The person who is electing his elector, and the electoral representative elects the president. Well, in Europe, citizen of, let's say, Poland, Germany, or England, elects his government, and the government then sends his representative to this council, and then the decisions in the council are taken by this rule of qualified majority. So there are many examples, and I think there are here members of PI, Parliamentary Institute, recruiting bodies. So of course, in a sense, it's a similar situation. For instance, like I remember, there's a group of postdocs. The group of postdocs can choose representatives who then are eligible to take part in the voting on behalf of other postdocs, and they are the members of this committee who is eligible to approve the decisions. So as you see, such indirect system of voting is used very often. And then a similar question can be asked. What is a voting power of a single member of such a voting body? First of all, one has to distinguish two things. So the voting power is still yet not defined politically, defined in a second. But this voting power, we intuitively have a feeling with that, needs not to be proportional to the number of votes. So let's say the simplest case now, let's say more business-like application, so we have a stock company for simplicity, there are the two shareholders, A has 52% of stocks, B has 48% of stocks, and decisions are taken with the standard 50% majority. What you see, the shareholder A, even though he has only 52% of stock, has full power, he can do whatever he wishes during such a meeting of the shareholders, while B, even though he has a lot of stocks, his voting power is zero. He cannot do anything. It's a very simple example, which shows basically voting power is not necessarily proportional to the number of votes. So then, another question arises. If it's not the number of voting of votes, so what's that? How to define voting power? How to define the influence a member of voting body has on the final result? This very question was discussed many years ago by a person, the name of you know. But you know the last name, I'm not sure whether you know the first name. Lionel Penrose is father of Roger, of Sir Roger Penrose, of Jonathan Penrose, and of the third one is Oliver Penrose. This is the Penrose father. Do you know his results? He was a very... Okay, not only he was the father of the Penroses, but himself. He did a lot of interesting research in different branches of mathematics. What's interesting was also a medical doctor, psychiatrics, genetics, and so on. And also a theorist of chess. So the brother of the brother, Jonathan Penrose, one of the Penrose brothers, was chess master, by the way. And for him, the main motivation to tackle this problem was as after the Second World War, there was a new organization, United Nations, which was formed, and he would discuss exactly how this organization should take its decisions. Yes?
Why are the Penguins underlined? Or how did you teach the country?
I think my colleague Solczynski could prepare this view that would be could answer this question. I'm not able to. Okay, I only know that we would like to discuss voting power for its threat. So, the theory of Penrose goes to the year was just 1946. And then he already, no, so already more than, it is, well, almost 50 years ago, as he wrote a couple of important papers on the subject. So, to make it more precise, more mathematically defined, he defined what's nowadays called a priori voting power of a person in X as a probability that a vote cast by him will be decisive. So it means that there will be a winning coalition which will fail to be winning without X. So again, we assume that there are some rules. For instance, the winning majority is defined. It could be 50%, could be 70%, whatsoever. It is well defined. The winning coalitions are defined as those which get more votes as necessary. And then you can ask for what coalitions they will be winning with X, but will not be winning without X. Because there are some of those. And then, look, the vote of X in this case is important, because somehow we can see that he has an influence. If he joins the coalition, it will be winning. If not, it will not be winning. So then, the idea of Penrose is to quantify the voting power of X as a probability. And that a randomly taken coalition will be decisive, which contains player X. And here, another remark has to be made. What do we mean by randomly chosen coalitions? So, in fact, as you can guess, one can make various assumptions how those random probabilities are constructed. Before, in the literature, there exist many different notions of voting power indices. strangely enough, the first paper by Penrose got somehow forgotten. Then came another paper by Schatte and Schubig. So you used to work with Schubig,
yeah.
But not on those subjects. Or
no.
Yeah. And it's called nowadays Schatte-Schubig index. And then there was a paper by Banzhaf, so he was an American, in fact, not a mathematician, but a lawyer, and he published a paper in the same spirit much later. And then in America, we start to quote his concept like a Banzhaf index. Nowadays, people realize that it's exactly the same idea as Penrose, and start to use it as a Penrose Banzhaf index. And then, well, of course, as you can guess, there are no ideal entities, so both concepts have different advantages and drawbacks. So for many years, we gave theory, tried to somehow improve them, and there are many, many new, more sophisticated quantities defined. However, now, for this purpose, I will just stick to the original idea of Penrose later advocated by Banzhaf. So I'll define for you how the Penrose Banzhaf index could be computed. And the idea is rather simple. So let's assume we have n players, for instance, n members of the voting committee in the Perimeter Institute voting body. So number of coalitions obviously to 12. We assume that there are only two decisions to be taken, yes or no, to accept somebody or not to accept. So of course there are two possible coalitions. And now number of winning coalitions W, it of course now depends on the threshold, on the quota. We can assume basically that let's say quota is just standard majority, so half plus one, for instance. Now we compute number of coalitions with a given player. So then the number of coalitions is 2 to n minus 1, because there are n minus 1 other players. We compute the number of winning coalitions with this player with the index I, and compute number of coalitions for which the vote of x is critical. It means that if x joins the group, the coalition is winning. If not, the coalition fails to satisfy the criterion. And then this coefficient ci is just the twice the number of winning coalitions minus the total number of coalitions. And then to rescale it, we define a Banzhaf index as cn over the total number of coalitions the player could possibly take part in. So this is it. This is a quantity. However, it's often convenient to normalize those quantities, and Penrose Banzhaf index is nothing else as a rescale variable. So ci are some numbers which have this interpretation of probabilities, but we sum them to unity and now use beta rescaled quantities which sum to unity. And then already in 46, Penrose noted that this coefficient beta has a very simple interpretation. Namely, probability that player X is on the winning side is equal to 1 plus beta over 2. Look, if a voter has no influence at all, nobody cares about him, then even then, with probability 1/2, he can just by chance be on the winning side. So now beta is, as you see, it measures the excess, how much more than 1/2 the probability is that he will be on the winning side. Is it clear? So it's still a very simple concept, yes?
So this is assuming a uniform prior instead of crossing correlations?
Yes, yes, it is so. So then, practically, this assumption means that people, for instance, who represent body of postdocs in PI, they took the decision among themselves. Now one representative comes to the meeting of the body and he is not going to discuss anything, he's just voting for them. So this is the idea that the representatives, like for instance Europe, they already are bounded by some agreements in their country, they have to represent their country, so they do not have a chance to discuss the issue with other members of the voting body. So here in this model, we do not somehow discuss the possibility that a person would try to convince another to change the opinion and so on. No, no, it's very simple. So somehow people are coming to the meeting of the voting body already knowing what the hell they will vote. And they do not watch left or right, they just raise their hand or not, and we only count the total results. So then the idea is that the probability that he will vote yes or no does not depend on this, what the other people are doing. What, of course, might not be the case in real life. And therefore, there are many different approaches somehow how to take this into account. As usual, as in physics, is a model. Yes?
Well, I'm just assuming some sequence of events here, in the sense that the person who joins the coalition has already.
No, I mean, here, look, okay, so this is another, let's say, approach. And it may then lead to a bit different index. Here, somehow the coalition is not yet specified, because let's assume everybody comes like to this room. For instance, let's assume we're going to vote now whether we should continue with this series of seminars next semester, and then we are not going to discuss anything, only you are supposed to write yes or no, and then we'll collect the votes. So this is such a model. And then so we don't know whether we join the coalition, which is winning or not. You are just voting. Let's assume for the cut of you and your family, for instance. And then we collect the all votes. Okay. So this is such a simple, simplistic model. So let me give you a simple example, again taken from the history of Europe. There was something before the European Union, what was called the European Economic Community, and between 58 and 72 it consisted of six countries. Oh, six is a nice number, and then it's, I think it's easy to calculate. So there were three huge countries, Germany, France, Italy, two smaller parts in Belgium, and one very small Luxembourg. We don't have here anyone from Luxembourg, don't we? Because it occurs that the situation was critical for Luxembourg, but somehow Luxembourg survived. So look, the situation is more simple. There were six countries, and clever people decided that they will attribute to each minister different number of votes, and for large countries, minister of Germany, France, or Italy got four votes, for smaller countries, two votes, so Belgium and Poland got two, and the smallest Luxembourg got only one vote. So in total there were 70 votes, just the sum of those numbers. They decided that the decision is taken if the number of votes voting for a given decision is 12 or more. So let's call it a quarter. As you see, it's a bit more than 50%. Well, you could think a reasonable rule, reasonable solution. But now, it's a very nice game just to use this Penrose Banzhaf idea and compute. Let's say, so we compute what is the total number of coalitions, total number of winning coalitions, difference, and Banzhaf index. In the case, for instance, it's of course equal for three large countries. So it's equal to 5 over 16 for three large countries, 3 over 16, so okay, smaller for Poland and Belgium. And now look, nothing more than 0 for the three. So it could look a bit odd. Why is it so? Even without going into details, look, if the number of votes given is an even number, only Luxembourg has an odd number, and the quota is even, then basically a representative from Luxembourg can sleep all the time during the meeting of the European Union, because its votes has no impact whatsoever. It's clear without any further mathematics. So somehow, why is it in Europe? We're not asking mathematicians for advice or anybody like that, because even without any very detailed analysis, one could see that it must be so. So here exactly those red results mean that exactly its voting power principle was zero, because independently of whether it joined a coalition or not, the coalition was winning or was not winning. So as you see, such an amazingly simple rules, which basically look reasonable, 4-4-4, 2-2-1, well, why not? It occurred to me, okay, really, unjust. Then it would not be so difficult to change a bit. For instance, had we decided to put quota as 11 or 13 to take a closest odd number, then the situation would be different, because obviously then the one vote of this could be weak. So the first observation is that people, important in politics, very often do not consult specialists in game theory. But now I will discuss the current situation in Europe. Well, current situation has changed, even as I did those view graphs 2 weeks ago, a bit more, the situation has changed. What has changed? First of all, let me remind you that there was a system discussed and agreed in Nice a couple of years ago. The system concerns again how the European Council will take its decision. So the idea, older idea from Nice was in a sense an extension of this idea from 58, that for all countries one attributed number of weights of votes, for instance the largest, those largest of Germany, France, Italy and Great Britain obtained 29, then smaller like Spain and Poland 27 and so on and so on. So this assignment was not entirely proportional, and then it was said that altogether there were how many votes? 321 votes distributed, and then decision was considered to be taken if the number of total number of votes of those representatives in the council voting for was equal or larger than 232, which makes 72%. However, this was only the one criteria. Another one was that the number of states need to represent at least 62% of the total population of the Union. And the third one was just standard majority, so the number of yes votes needed to be more than half, so 13 out of 20. It was an old system, basically, it's still working right now.
And all three of those have to be satisfied?
And. So simultaneously, three criteria need to be satisfied that the decision to be taken. So, shortly speaking, it's a system based on three criteria. And then, in last year in Brussels, the treaty in Brussels agreed to accept the double majority criterion, which is much simpler. So basically, they abandoned the first criteria, there are no votes whatsoever, so it's very simple. There are the two criteria, B and C there, and only those quotas are never changed. So now the new rules say that the decision is taken if member of states represent at least 65% of population, and it's and there is a 55% majority, so at least 15 states out of 25 have to say yes. There are some exceptional circumstances and some other sub-cases that we don't need to go into details. Now you could think, well, is it easy to guess some change from the old system to a new one, for what countries it will be favorable? Maybe it's not so easy to guess. However, let's say from the political point of view, I'm not sure that place the current politics in Europe. Basically, two countries were very much against the changes from Nice to, let's say, constitution. They were Spain and Poland. So just those states which were not the largest, but let's say second largest percent of population. So here's in a sense a mathematical explanation of this fact. Here, so you know already how to compute Penrose-Pascal index. Basically, one needs to check all coalitions. So in this case, there are 25 countries. There's 2 to 25th this number of coalitions. So it's a lot. Of course, computer can do it in a few minutes, perhaps. So it's not a great task to compute it. So then here, you have a sketch which shows you the relative. Right? So at this axis, we have a difference. European constitution, so the new system, minus old system, Nice. So here is in percent of relative Penrose-Pascal index, where along this axis we have all European countries ordered according to population. So here is Germany, France, Great Britain, Italy, Spain, Poland, and here there's more like Estonia, Cyprus, Luxembourg, and Poland. So what do you see? You see that who's winning? Large countries, especially Germany, and small countries. It's simple to explain. There, now, after the change, only two criteria. One is per capita. So for capita, of course, the countries which have a lot of heads, then they are important in this voting. So So then the change would be favorable for them. On the other hand, for small countries like Malta and Luxembourg, in the criterion per capita, they are to be neglected at all, because their population is very, very small. However, they are still important because, of course, their vote counts. Like, it's necessary to get 15 out of 25 votes of each country. So therefore, they are also winning. And then, since, let's say, both, if we take, let's say, okay, I cannot bend the stick, but if it takes like a stick and order all countries according to the population and try to bend it upwards, so of course, what goes down is just the central part. So then it happens that especially all those countries which are in the middle of the population, will lose. I would rather say would lose, because the recent development is that just a week ago in France and later on in Holland, they decided to turn down the European Constitution. So perhaps the system will not start operating. Which is a bit ironic that for France it was very advantageous, for Holland, for Netherlands it was disadvantageous, but of course people somehow, the internal politics seem to play a larger role than such mathematical consideration. However,
Is the Lithuanian vote zero, or just a change
of zero? Change, no, it's relative. So somehow for Lithuania, it occurs that their voting power will not change. So from this point of view, they're on the same side. However, interestingly enough, in the popular press, people claim that the system of constitution is very simple, is very exact, very representative. Well, because it's so simple that it must be good. Interestingly enough, already in 52, Lionel Penrose, so he definitely was not aware of the European Constitution discussed in 2004, he wrote a sentence I will read for you. If two votings were required for every decision, one on a per capita basis, and the other upon the basis of a single vote for each country, the system would be inaccurate in that it would tend to favor large countries. Isn't it a kind of prophetic review of the European Constitution, which was discussed 50 years, almost 50 years later? As you see, we were very much enthusiastic by discovering such a quotation. However, it happens that perhaps people responsible for creating the new system were maybe not aware of the neglect of this. And now I'd like to explain why is it so. Why such a, what was the argument of Penrose? Why such a system, which seems to be very just, very representative, is favorable for large countries? The statement that such a system is not representative, it just means that the voting power in different countries, voting power of a single citizen in different countries is not the same. So, nowadays in the game theory literature, there exists a so-called first square root law of Penrose, which says that it could be somehow translated for this program, that each citizen of the Union has the same influence of the decision taken by the voting body if the number of votes of a state is proportional to the square root, the square root of its population. And here a short explanation. So you see square root is red, well, it's important, but not. It's proportional to the number of population, as you might guess, but to the square root. So this is a square root law of the Penrose father. And the explanation is simple, and the one formula will take. First, let's see what is the voting power of a citizen in a given country. Obviously, you will believe me that the influence of a person from Luxembourg for election of his government is larger than Germany. Because Luxembourg is a small country, only 400,000 people, and Germany is, I don't know how many times bigger, something like 160 times bigger. So an average German citizen has not as large influence on the elections. But now the question is, how much is the voting power of a citizen of Luxembourg large? And the explanation is that the voting power L of a citizen in each country will be proportional to 1 over square root of its population. 1 over square root. In fact, this is the maximum voting power. Because look, let's assume, let's stick to this example concerning the continuation of this seminar for the next semester. If, let's say, only one person would like to continue and all others would not, then of course the voting power of this single person is 0, to be negative. So the result, the voting power in the actual voting, of course, depends on the polarization of opinion. We don't know a priori. However, you could ask what is the maximal voting power of each of us, for instance. So when our voting power will be maximal? Of course then, if there exists a polarization of voices, if let's say half of you would like to continue the seminar, half of you will not, so then I have a, let's say, huge voting power, because my voice will be important. So, let's make such a simple assumption and use the famous Bernoulli scheme and Sperling expansion. So I don't need to go into details, you know all that. So we assume we have standard Bernoulli scheme. So we have n players. This is a probability that we'll get k successes. Now let's assume that p and q are equal to 1/2. So we ask what is the probability if we, let's say, n times toss the coin, which is a fair coin, that we'll get result exactly n/2. So this is a very standard calculation. Of course, you get the famous result 1 over square root of n, which is the same square root of n as, let's say, the result of the law of diffusion. Yes?
So is this statement one up there a theorem or an assumption?
Could you repeat this?
Statement 1, voting power W is equal to the product of voting power. It's got 3 times the voting power of the minister.
Okay, this is, let's say, definition.
Okay.
It's a definition because we say, since the voting is indirect, my only influence is that I can possibly change my representative. So my voting power is my voting power times his voting power in the, let's say, European Council. Okay?
Right, but you could also just ignore the fact that there's this intermediary and say, take all the citizens of all the countries and look at, again, the winning coalition. Does that give you the same?
No. For a given citizen, let's analyze the situation for a given citizen. As a Polish citizen, I can only, what I can do, I can only take part in the election in Poland and try to change the government, okay, if I wish, if I think that this is a good one. And so all my, what I can do in the European, to influence indirectly the result of the voting in the European Council. So therefore, I say, okay, I want to have some power to elect my minister, and then what is going to be his voting power in the voting building.
Right, no, I realize that. And obviously in the real system, the ministers get to make lots of votes, so maybe that makes sense.
But yes.
The minister is just making one vote.
Yeah, exactly. You are right. So in a sense, all of this is reasonable if you can assume that you can somehow beat the system like statistical physicists do. So it will be not only one voting, but there will be many votings on different issues. And concerning Europe, the case is much more, it's much better than the elections in the US, which only happens once for 4 years. Here it's really so that we will elect our ministers and then they will vote on different issues, maybe not very often, but relatively often. So then such kind of statistical approach is justified.
Well, but I mean, it's just a question of if one is a definition, I just want to know if it agrees with what you would get from doing this other calculation.
Honestly speaking, I have not done the other calculation. So this is the answer. But then, so this is definitely the simplest possible estimation of a voting power of a citizen in such a direct voting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure I agree with that. I mean, the simplest one, I think, probably most people would have written down 1 over n rather than 1 over root n.
Okay,
I understand the logic.
Okay,
that's my point, is that if you're trying to derive results rather than just defining them, it seems to me there could be some justification behind it.
Okay, but what is strictly derivative is just a statement. Let's forget about the European Council, but only in the direct voting, let's assume you are just a member of the voting body in PI, you get one vote per N, and of course the more people, your voting power goes down, and now the question is how it goes down. So the statement of Penrose is, your maximal voting power goes down as 1 over square root of N. Simple and concrete result. And this concerns only voting, let's say direct voting. Because this is the definition of your maximal influence for the result of the voting, which is independent of the polarization. So now the idea is that if the maximal influence of a single citizen for election in his country scales like 1 over square root of N, then the system will be representative if each minister gets number of votes proportional to square root of N. Then two factors would cancel under an additional assumption, which is still a bit tricky, that the voting weight of every member state should be equal to its voting power. This is still unclear in this region. And now I will present a system which has, let's say, a very simple application of this law. The only interesting thing is, it gets stated its name, so P stands for Penrose and 62 for the quota. Because we have still one parameter to play with. What will be the quota for the qualified majority? So there is a system which has only one criterion. Rules are simple. A state in population N gets the number of votes proportional to square root of N, because technically what has to do. Round it somehow. And then the council takes a decision if the sum of votes in favor exceeds 62% of all votes. And now this number 62 I will explain in a second. Why is it taken like this? So here are just results. So, well, we made many numbers, but we don't need to look at them. So, exactly, so here are countries like order according to population, from Germany to Malta. Here's population, goes down, square root of the population. So, weights is just the percentage of those square roots, if you sum all square roots together. And here, so this is very simple, and here is a power index, Penrose Balzac index, which, as I discussed, it's already a result of rather complicated calculations. Okay, not too complicated, but still we have to add, let's say, 35 million of numbers. However, what occurs is, now please compare, that for instance, for Germany, weight is, the percentage is 1036, the power is 1035, let's say for UK it's 862 and here 863. So with a very good approximation, it happens that if you choose quota at this level, then computed voting power, so the probability defined by Penrose is just equal to the weights. To the weights by construction attributed according to the square. So that now you see that choosing this value quota, the system fulfills exactly the law of Penrose and this representation. So now let me comment on this number, which I could call a critical number. So here I plotted following quantity, Banzhaf power index as a function of, as a ratio to voting weight. So I remind that in the reasoning of Penrose, this quantity should be equal to 1. And here as a function of the quota. So quota changes from 1/2, it's just standard majority, to let's say this to 1, so 100%. And now here I plotted some 5 special cases, some countries, so Germany, France, Poland, Holland, and Luxembourg. And for instance, let's consider Germany. So if we increase quota, it means that you somehow require that more and more countries would agree. So what happens for Germany? If we went to 1 here, then it would mean that all countries need to agree. So then, even very small countries would have a large influence. So since Germany has a large population, if the quota increases, they will slightly lose their voting power. As on contrary, if we take Luxembourg, if we increase quota, then the small Luxembourg will gain its voting power. And strangely enough, tell the truth, this is a very strange for me, that all those cards almost cross, I mean, not exactly, but almost at the one critical point. Here I cross it all the time. But as you can now guess, if you take any state, for instance, with the population between, then the curve will look like this. And in fact, all 25 lines almost cross in this very point. So there's at least, you see, one distinguished point in which all lines cross. So the power index is exactly equal to the voting weight proportional to the square root of the population.
Carol.
Yes?
So it's not actually strange that they cross, right? Because the only reason that they don't cross exactly, I mean, that all lines, and yet in the case of infinite votes, right, all the lines would have to be between the highest population state and the lowest population state. And so when those two lines cross, the other ones would have to also.
Yes and no. Of course, they have to, you're right, concerning the prediction of the behavior. However, let's say mathematically, it could also happen that one goes like this. Second goes, let's say, like this, third, like this, and they could basically not cross necessarily a single point. So then, this behavior is somewhat interesting, and here I can show another quantity. It's just the sigma, is just a variance with respect, so the square root deviations or square root residuals of computed weighted voting power to the square root of the population, and this sum achieves its minimums almost zero at this single point. So this reasoning shows why we have chosen this very quota, 62% for 0.62, as a quota for qualified measure. Okay? And under this assumption, it occurs that the system is representative in the sense that each a citizen of each country has the same maximal voting power, so the same potential influence for the decisions taken by the council. And this is, in a sense, end of the story concerning European Union. But now, let's say, it starts a new story concerning statistical physics or mathematics, how to interpret such a situation. So what we have done, as you can guess, using a statistical approach, we are now trying to figure out whether this behavior is only somehow related to special population distribution, which is the case for the European Union, which we use in the computations, or is it rather a more general phenomenon? So what we did, we computed random populations. So now we went away from the European Union. So let's assume, for instance, that there is, let's say, 1 million of people living in N states. So we divide them into M states, so XI are just percentages of fractions of populations in each country. And then altogether, those numbers XI sum to unity, they are positive and negative. So as you see, this is kind of a probability simplex. There's one distinguished measure of the probability simplex, this so-called Fisher statistical measure, which basically is proportional to square root of X. So we have generated many such, let's say, random unions and computed function of quota of this residuum and observed, let's say, where such a minimum will occur. So here this is, let's say, a critical quota is defined as a minimum of this curve. And what occurred? First of all, it occurred that this behavior is in a sense typical, that almost for all, let's say, cases, those curves, M curves, cross in practically in one point, but the position of this minimum changes. And it changes in the following way. So here is at this table you see M is the number of countries, and here are numbers of, let's say, this is the critical quota. There are two lines here. F is just a Fisher measure, which is somehow statistically distinguished, but there's also a possibility to take uniform measure. Differences are very small, but what's important that those numbers decrease to M. So the larger number of countries, the larger number of votes, the smaller the optimal vote. And this is somehow reasonable and just. Because look, if the number of countries increases, then it's more and more difficult to gather a given number, let's say, of 55% of votes. So therefore, one can expect that in the limit of, because this is not so much an interesting limit from the point of view of politics, but more from mathematics, in the limit of n going to infinity, then this critical, oh, sorry, this is a mistake, it's a typo, the critical quota goes down and goes to 1/2, goes to 50%. So then, if you had a very many voters, then the optimal quota would be just 50%, 1/2 of all voters. So here is the application of those results to the European Union. Let's say, in a sense, it's kind of retroactively. We can treat the history of the European Union. For instance, at the beginning, there were 6 countries, so from this point of view, the optimal quota should be something like 73. By the way, it was the number which was somehow discussed even recently by Nice. So this is basically what's strange and nice, that those numbers are of the same order of magnitude as those numbers politicians really take into account. However, here, we found some kind of justification of such numbers. Then in 73, there were 9 countries, including Great Britain, Ireland, and Denmark. So for those 9, the optimal quota should be something like 67, and then it goes down to, let's say, 62 or 61, because the system, as you see here, has a very important feature. It can be extended very easily if, for instance, what might happen soon, Romania and Bulgaria will join the Union. So then you don't need to change basically anything. The system can be adopted. Only the total number of population is changed, so the weights are redistributed according to square root law, and then perhaps one could only slightly decrease by, say, 0.5% the optimum. As you can guess, so now almost conclusion, but now let's say a more personal opinion. So we posted a paper on this last year, exactly before the summit in Brussels. And now, as you can guess, several people got interested, and now we get some journalists were quoting our solution, and we were amazed that in the internet so many people got interested. But then it occurred that even some of our colleagues discussed the issue with politicians, some at least Polish politicians got interested, but in Europe, basically, people were thinking that they are aware of this fact, but politicians treat it as a more or less academic curiosity, and they were not so much interested. However, what we managed to do, we managed to write a joint paper with 2 important scientists from Germany and Great Britain. And therefore, this was nice for us because Germany and Great Britain, as you maybe remember, are from those countries who might potentially win on the change from Nice to Constitution. But still, they advocated the, let's say, scientific game theory-like approach of Penrose and advocated let's say, usage of his theory in setting the European Constitution or in creating new rules of voting. However, politicians are not so much interested, and now it's not so difficult to guess why, because they need, so of course, they have to gather and discuss different issues, and if they were given a simple mathematical recipe, then somehow they had nothing else to do, and they needed not to bargain or to, so somehow their voting power would be taken away from them, had we somehow convinced everybody to define, let's say, a more mathematical approach and define a voting system more, let's say, devised objective. So to continue, conclude, first point is that the voting system adopted by the European Constitution is not representative, as Penrose already predicted 50 years ago. Therefore, I have some mixed feeling about the recent political events in France and Netherlands, so I don't think it's so much, I agree with it, but not so much, that it will not be accepted in this way forward. And to emphasize the achievement of Penrose, it allows to understand why such a apparently simple double criterion system is not just, because it overrepresents very huge and very small countries. The system proposed by us based on the law of Penrose is simple, is evaluative, is efficient, is transparent, and so on. However, it is not easy to convince politicians. This is a good system. This is the only disadvantage. And of course, I know, to be honest, politicians claim some that perhaps it's good, but only for all the academics usage, but they will never try to convince citizens to use square roots. Of course, for strange enough, if they write the UK Constitution in such a language, legal language, which is anyway difficult to understand, not for specialists, they pretend that it's not possible to use such a definitions like not even using logarithms from given that square roots. So then we had a proposition that you can use only in our system to be modified to say that the number of votes of each country will be proportional to the diameter of the country under the assumption that the density is constant. But that was more interesting now for us, for the academia, there's an interesting application which is basically between game theory and also perhaps statistical physics, that this behavior, that there exists an optimal quota under which the voting power is practically equal to the square root of population. It's typical not only for this distribution of population, but for any general. For any general distribution of populations, and it would be nice to prove a more rigorous mathematical statement under what assumptions this occurs. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for that. Very interesting. Other questions?
Aren't there other facts which are at least as important as this, as when you get, for example, voters are more likely to agree with people who speak the same language because they read the same newspapers, or things like that, which would run the other way.
Yes, of course, look, it's a good question, and as you can guess, there might be very many different factors which potentially might be important. However, this is a statistical approach, and since there will be very many votings taken in the European Council, then somehow you can say that all those fluctuations, let's say differences in languages, or let's say common interests, or anti-correlations, will be, in a sense, wiped away, and then what really will matter under the long run will be just the population of each country, which is represented by a single minister.
No, but there, I mean, what, I guess I'm asking empirically. I mean, there are things that could be measured. For example, it might be that the effect of N is not the citizen in the country, is not the number of citizens, but the number of political parties or the number of newspapers. Or something that is, you know, people okay. don't actually, look. You know, when I go to vote, my decision is not an independent decision with all the other 20 million citizens of Ohio.
Yes, of course I understand. This is a very simplified model. But look, in a sense, it works only in such a very simple, simplistic case. If we have here, let's say, so many people as we are, we have only one decision, let's say, to meet next semester, not to meet, and then we come here and we vote and we take this in under the majority. And this, of course, it might be applicable for such a meeting like here, or perhaps election and perimeter. But of course, it's a very huge oversimplification concerning the real elections in the real country. However, I'm not aware of a better theory which could possibly take into account such subtle issues.
Well, but if you have a lot of data, like in Europe, could you make measurements? I mean,
the statistics, the amount of statistical data available is very, very limited. So there are not many data, I mean, concerning the European Union. Okay, so there are many people who are working on the subject, but what I want to say is not so easy to come up with a simpler, or maybe not simpler, but a relatively simple model which will take into account such subtle issues. Of course, the zero approximation, we are used to it in physics.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so one thing that happens in Europe is that France and Germany get together beforehand and decide how they vote to vote. And then the problem then is the sum of two stones of the split root. So isn't there a problem if you get countries themselves forming an axis, then your system
breaks? This is not a problem. Look, we're also thinking about this. The fact that the voting power is not additive, you could ask why it's not additive. First, mathematical observation. It cannot be additive because it's defined as a fraction. So those fractions are not additive. But this will not convince politicians. However, there's a nice political argument why it's not additive. Let's assume you have, let's say, your group, your country, I have mine, and we make a coalition. So now you say, okay, our voting power will increase, of course. But look, there are also obligations. Because if you make a coalition, then sometimes it will be like this, that I will have in our coalition to accept somehow your point of view. So somehow it means that forming coalition will also somehow cost something. So you will somehow have to share your voting power with your potential coalitions. Therefore, this is an argument why it needs not to be enough.
Still, on average, you increase your voting
power. No, you increase the voting power of two of the coalitions. The coalition of the country A and B is larger than A and B separate. However, for a single citizen in those countries, it's not necessarily the case. If you now recalculate for per citizen.
In fact, it could be, just to make a comment, that this system of square root could be less subject to invasion by these coalitions of a small number of countries than a linear system.
Right.
So, I don't know.
But if I understand, I mean, you started the talk with a certain problem by showing the red and blue map. If I understand, this doesn't deal with that problem. Because if you live in a state, you know, say Germany, most of the people think the opposite of you, then you have a very low vote.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
this square root law doesn't do anything to deal with that problem.
This is correct. So, I finished discussing the case in Europe concerning, let's say, the US and Ohio. The point is that, first of all, the a priori voting power is different from real voting power, but the maximal voting power is obtained under the assumption that opinions are maximally polarized. So from this point of view, the voters in Ohio could use their maximal voting power because they were really maximal because the votes were polarized. While in, let's say, Texas or California, it was not the case, or in New York State.
Well, it would probably change the election if you had the electoral college votes going as a square root of n.
That would just change it.
It could be.
But it wouldn't change the fact that a voter in Ohio has.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. Of course, it wouldn't, because this is a different effect. This effect that the actual voting power depends on the polarization in a given voting body. So you cannot predict the actual voting power a priori. A priori, you can only predict maximal voting power.
So why don't you, I mean, if the whole purpose is to equalize everyone's voting power,
yes,
why don't you just get rid of the states and have equal districts all across Europe? Everyone will understand that.
Well, okay.
So that there must be.
No, it's a good point, but somehow there are some initial conditions that the council already defined. And I'm not going to change the countries. So there's only this question how to actually put given number of votes for how to settle up, cook up the voting system for the European Union, which does exist. But of course, concerning actions in the US, you might think that perhaps one could a bit try to modify the elections rule, for instance, number of electors per state and so on. And I know that people are discussing the issue very vividly right now. So it's still a hot topic on the internet. There are many, let's say, different opinions. Usually, of course, there are academic opinions, even at American universities. Take care, politicians maybe not so much.
Yeah.
One of the other differences between the European Council and the US presidential election is that the European Council is voting on legislative changes or something like that, where a no means that it stays as it is.
Yes.
And therefore it's reasonable to regard an abstention as basically the same as a no. And if my understanding of the rules is correct, they basically work like that. You'd have to get a certain percentage population of the actual member states.
Yes, correct.
Whereas in the US presidential election, you're either choosing one person or you're choosing another. So how does that affect the way you should design?
Okay, it's entirely going to mark, and therefore it basically means that this Reynolds model will work much better for the European case in North America. Because then there's a many different elections, so then the statistical approach and the probability approach of Reynolds will work much better than in the US, where you could hardly directly use this model for American elections, which take which are organized only once every 4 years.
You should compare to the US Congress rather than
President. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's one another way of asking questions. What is the power of abstaining? In the European Council, it's the same as voting no. It's always the same.
You mean now a power of a minister, say, or a representative. But here we discuss the power of an average citizen, and under the assumption that ministers are going to do what the government tells them to do. So they were not somehow abstaining on purpose.
Well, there was a referendum in Italy very recently, it may not have happened yet, I'm not sure, on some legislative change.
Where?
In Italy, they were having a popular referendum, and in order for the change to happen, there had to be something like a majority of people who voted, and also a majority of the total electorate had to vote. So you get very strange effects where if you think that the vote is going to go against you, then you're better off abstaining than voting no.
So it's also like those people who invented such a system were not consulting with the specialists of game theory.
Lee?
So I'm skeptical of the whole kind of enterprise, and I want to try to articulate why. Okay. We can only apply equilibrium statistical mechanics to systems that are near equilibrium, such that something like the partition assumption is right. Okay.
Good.
Systems that we know are far from equilibrium, where equipartition is false, it's completely useless to apply equilibrium statistical mechanics. And if, for example, there are many examples from economics where people do mathematical economics and it's just useless because they employ assumptions equivalent to equilibrium or equipartition, which are just have nothing to do with the reality of the what's going on in the economic system. And I'm worried that in Penrose and the others' assumptions, things like counting the possible the large number of possible coalitions one might be in or so forth, that there are assumptions underlying your counting which are equivalent to the system of voters is near equilibrium. I have an equal probability of any other voter influencing the outcome. I have an equal probability of joining any coalition as any other coalition. And these things just have nothing to do with political reality. Political reality is, and the idea that you can study in some mathematical way a system of elections and not take into account the influence of money, the influence of newspapers, the influence of opinion makers, the influence of political parties, and get something useful out, seems to me as silly as studying a far from equilibrium system and assuming equipartition.
Well,
it may not be a little bit right for a fact, if I go to a politician and show something like this, they're going to say, this has nothing to do with the reality I deal with. I deal with, how can I raise a lot of money to make a big advertising campaign so that I can convince people, or how do I get to the people who write the editorials in the newspapers?
Okay, so do you understand I cannot fully agree with the statement? But first of all, since you are not a politician, as far as I know, but this argument, let's say, addressed. So, let's not cheat this entire ideology or methodology, but try to consider a simplest system that you are a member of PI voting body, which consists of N people.
But if N is 20, it's a completely different phenomenon than if N is 10 million or 100 million.
Okay, but still, the first question is whether you could devise a reasonable model of voting to determine how your... First, you will definitely agree that your voting power decreases the number of people. Don't you think so? It decreases.
I think it depends on...
Of course, in practical situation, it does. You might have much larger impact in parameter because you are lean. But let's assume if we at the very end, write our votes at the ballot, which are anonymous, and then collect them. So we are assuming such a model situation in which the, of course, we have some impact on the other voters. So we are not trying to model how you could possibly change the opinion of other people. By the way, physicists are just start, not only this, social scientists also, for a couple of years, are just recently discussing such a problem, how the public opinion changes, and they have a also dynamic system modeling how one person could convince another person, and so on. This is a different kind of models. But here, the problem is how the voting power decreases with the number of the voting body. And here, I don't think, just to finish, with a strong statement, anybody could produce a model, reasonable, simple model, which will give you a different answer than this of Penrose, I mean, one of those Penrose of them. And this is basically the main ingredients for all our further considerations.
Well, one can imagine, I'm not against modeling, but one can imagine a kind of modeling in which, and I'm not saying, I mean, if you say, on the basis of some, you know, principles of social justice, how should politics be organized, okay, and then make a model of that, that's fine, okay, and I'm with you, okay, and I think that it should be one person, one vote throughout every system, okay, but if you're trying to make an analysis of real elections that happen, and trying to start from where we are and increase how equitable or how just the elections are, it's a very different story. I mean, it might be that they're, you know, that there are different agents and there is a distribution of the influence that different agents have.
Okay. I entirely agree. I only repeat that this is only estimation of the maximum a priori voting power, which is only a rough approximation of your actual voting power. However, it's the only what can be done before the elections, without knowing the detailed situation in a voting body.
There's time for one more question, I guess, if someone has it. Okay, then otherwise, I would thank our speaker. That was a very interesting talk.
Invite you for the next meeting, will be another talk by Maya, this time about
turbulence in the universe.
Yes. So next Thursday, the same time. Thank you.
Yeah.